Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the Change Your Mind podcast, where we explore personal development, spirituality, and science. I'm your host, Chris Ashley. I am super excited for my guest today. He has a background in tech, which, as a lot of you know, I do as well. But he left tech, like I did, to really focus on human expansion and helping people come home to themselves. So I am so excited for today's conversation. First, couple quick announcements. Head over to the links in the show notes. You're going to find a lot there. You'll find ways to sponsor the podcast, ways to connect with me, ways to connect with my amazing guest. You'll find a link to my own book, Change Your Mind to Change Your Reality. It was endorsed by three people from the film The Secret: Marcy Shimoff, Michael Beckwith, Bob Doyle. It was endorsed by John Gray, who wrote Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus. Let's see what else. Ways to get some free downloads, courses, coaching. There's just like a lot there, so go check it out. And as always, this podcast is part of the Los Angeles Tribune Podcast Network. Sounds kind of weird that a podcast network is owned by a newspaper, but we are doing massive things in the personal development realm, spearheaded by an amazing woman named Mary, who was Tony Robbins' EVP of production for 18 years. So we have live events every month. I was just on stage with Les Brown, Dr. Joe Vitale, Sharon Lecter. So come be a part of this. What if the one thing keeping you stuck is the way you think? Welcome to Change Your Mind with Chris Ashley, the podcast where science meets spirituality and mindset becomes your most powerful tool for transformation. I'm Chris Ashley, author of Change Your Mind to Change Your Reality, trainer, speaker, and lifelong seeker. For years, I battled trauma, depression, anger, chronic illness, low self-worth, and the weight of old stories. Until I discovered how to rewire my mind, reconnect with my divine nature, and consciously create a new reality from the inside out. This show is here to help you do the same. Each week, we explore the intersection of personal development, spirituality, and science, diving into topics like healing, emotional mastery, entrepreneurship, resilience, and the quantum nature of reality. You'll hear powerful stories, gain practical tools, and real conversations that will help you change your perspective, get unshakable confidence, and live the vision your soul has always known is possible. Whether you're navigating a major life shift, building your dream business, or seeking deep healing and alignment, you're in the right place. So if you're ready to break through, take back your power, and create a life on your terms, this is your moment. Let's break free from the patterns that hold us back, awaken to who we truly are, and rise. Your transformation starts now. All right, so with me today, I have Andre Schabelman. So born to Argentine Jewish parents and raised within a larger Catholic Colombian community in New Orleans, Andres grew up in many different worlds. As his experiences have taken him around the planet, he's been lucky enough to immerse himself within eclectic cultures, to learn from many different ancient traditions, and to start exploring the different dimensions of our consciousness. That's the part that got me excited, Andres. Another aspect of his being that perhaps is his superpower is that he is sensitive to the ways in which we all give away our power to external systems, people, organizations, societal pressures. Everything he does, from the book he wrote to the perfume he created to his comedy, and even including his travel content, is meant as a blueprint for humans to return to themselves. And I love that bio. Welcome. I'm so happy you're here, Andres.
Thanks for having me.
So I start all my episodes the same way, and that is by asking my guest what their origin story is. And I know you've done a lot in your life. So maybe give us the origin story that led you to writing your book and to kind of leaving tech and focusing more on helping people come home to themselves.
Yeah, I think just generally I grew up in this context, you know, immigrant family, Jewish. There's a lot of pressure in both of those two often to succeed and to play the game. And I played the game, and I played it really well. You basically gave me a system to be inside of, and I would win it. But I would win it in terms of like the external aspects of it, the validation piece. And a lot of that was, you know, to play into the the values and the way in which my parents really raised me to succeed. And I really am grateful for that, because it made me an independent person that could provide for himself. But along the way, as I was in tech and I went to Harvard's Kennedy School and I was an early Airbnb-er, and in my personal life with relationships, I just felt like I was missing the mark, even though I was succeeding on paper. And in a couple of those instances, I was left feeling more alone or less fulfilled or further away from something that I somehow knew I was far away from, which now I think I call my higher self. And at some point, you know, the writing is on the wall, the universe sends you signals that you got to look at yourself and at the blind spots. And that's kind of, you know, there's multiple moments there, you know, whether it be hiding from a partner and hurting their feelings and dehumanizing them in certain ways, or being drugged and robbed in Colombia, or making it to the floor of the New York Stock Exchange and making a lot of money, but realizing I still wasn't fully fulfilled. All those things, you know, they kind of led me to a point where I was like, okay, if I check off all the boxes, but am still feeling empty, then what next?
Yeah. I mean, that's amazing. You know, so many people out there are like, I want to make money. I want to, you know, then all my problems will be solved. Then I'll be happy. And I can't remember who it was. I think it was Jim Carrey that was like, I hope everyone becomes like a multimillionaire, because then they're going to see that that's not the key to their happiness.
Yeah. And I think you can actually also at times even make it really easy for you to ignore some of the things that are happening under the surface, because you can sort of like fall back on the money and say, oh, well, look, look at this thing that other people value. I'm doing well. And so you can kind of like hide behind it. I certainly did. I created an identity around the money for a period of time. And it further made me, I think, move away from some of the self-worth stuff that I really needed to look at. Like, because I could just say, oh, well, look, I'm doing well and everything's fine. But it wasn't.
So what was it that like was the kind of the straw in the camel's back that made you really be like, okay, this isn't the path that I'm meant to go down? And then follow-up question is like, what was the first kind of step you took in the other direction?
Yeah. I mean, it's hard because, you know, I don't think growth is fully linear, you know, so pinpointing one moment. But I will say, I think in the relationship space, that was the one that was the most clear, where I was missing the mark and kind of not being kind to my fellow humans who had shown specifically a lot of love to me. And so watching myself behave in ways that I couldn't, or I felt I couldn't control, where I was like subject to some other force or some other inertia that would have me show up in ways where I was just not kind. And then in one of those moments, a former partner of mine in one of those moments just, you know, she showed a lot of grace and love in one of those moments. And it made me stop and kind of stop a process through which I had used so frequently to avoid myself, which was actually the being hard on myself. Like the negative self-talk was one of the traps. And when she showed up and was like, hey, I understand why you did what you did. Like I myself have gone through periods of shame because of trauma and whatnot. And I just want to say that I want to be here with you in this. And I still have love and care for you in this moment. And then I was like, oh, well, if she can do that for me, maybe I can do that for me. And you know, I think I started to realize I had some blind spots there. That was kind of my first experience with those blind spots. And I would say plant medicine was one of the first kind of like forays into those blind spots, and in the form of ayahuasca specifically. And in the first ayahuasca ceremony that I was in, what came out was three, like I remember seeing three moments in my past where I had actually experienced shame, but I had used humor, specifically humor, and kind of like brushed it away as a way to show, as a way to kind of move through it and kind of not justify my own shame or feelings of that something had gone wrong. And that was my first experience really realizing, oh, wow, it turns out I'm not as boundaryless as I thought I was. It turns out I do have boundaries and that it's hard for me sometimes, especially with other people, to identify what they are. And that's when I went into therapy because I was like, okay, I really don't have contact with my wants and needs. I have been living my life really for other people's wants and needs. And at times I've been hurt by it. And I think ayahuasca allowed me to feel that pain of the ways in which I had abandoned myself.
Wow. That's amazing. I mean, I've heard so many people kind of gotten awakened by ayahuasca, but that's so interesting that it showed you moments in your past where you used humor to brush something off. And from that, you were able to have an epiphany. It sounds like it really just gives you what you need in that moment, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think that's you get the ceremony you need, not the ceremony you want is sort of like the running joke in there, because specifically with ayahuasca, which they call the grandmother medicine, as opposed to the grandfather, the grandmother is going to tell you what you need to hear. And she might not tell it to you in the most loving and caring way. She's going to tell you straight up. And that's kind of what my first couple ayahuasca experiences were like. I had a very firm but gracious grandmother coming at me.
That's cool. Did you have any fear going into that for the first time or no?
Yeah, I mean, I have a running fear all the time of losing my mind. Mm. Like, and in fact, actually, the control that goes into trying not to lose my mind is one of the first things that comes up in ayahuasca, because you try to physically control the experience. And that's specifically when you start getting more and more sick. So I'm like, okay. I'm going to stop trying to control this. I'm going to trust. I really built up a lot of trust with the shaman. And I think, you know, set and setting really matter here, and following your intuition and making sure you're working with the right people in the right context. But I had all of those things kind of checked off. And I think, you know, once I kind of let go of that control and could trust, then I really, I settled into a space where, you know, that fear, which really was my need to control out of, you know, it kind of dissipated. But yeah, I think people should be cautious, you know, like I don't think, you know, I don't really know the spiritual component of it. What I know is that you're in a very open state in those ceremonies. And the energy, or the, not just energy, like the actual thoughts that are or the intention of the healer or the other people in the room, that energy or the whatever is there really can affect you. And you realize that once you decide to go into your ceremony, the second you decide, it could even be like months before, some of the things that you start to see in your real life, like if you watch like a Netflix movie that is like really scary after you've decided to go into ceremony, a lot of times those thoughts and those images will show up in the ceremony. So I started to be like really cautious of the energy that I was allowing into my life and in ceremony. So that's what I really believe in, the power of it somehow. And I think people should exercise discernment and intuition when going down those paths.
I mean, I think that that's a good practice in life, right? Because like our diet isn't just what we eat. It's the content we consume, the people we surround ourselves with, the music we listen to, like the movies we watch, all of that can flood into our subconscious mind. And, you know, 95% of our day we're living through our subconscious, unless you're like actively working to reprogram it. Right. Yeah. Like a lot of people who come on the show are, but, you know, all of that affects you. Like I noticed even during like the election, when I would be like on TikTok and all of this like anger and hatred on like both sides. It was like, it was getting to me, you know? So you got to be mindful.
Totally. And like, I mean, sometimes I allow myself to go into those lower energy states because they are useful sometimes. Like not necessarily like, some aspects of lower energy states are useful because I think they calm the nervous system to a certain extent that maybe allow you to then kind of like rev the engine to come back. So I'm not so hard on myself when I'm in those places or when I'm surrounding myself with energy that I know, like sometimes I do, like when I know that I'm numbing when I re-download some stupid game on my phone and I'm like, fuck, I can't believe I'm doing this again. But I'm like, okay. I know that I'm in a numbing state. Okay. Yeah. I know that I'm numbing. I'll stay here for a second. But then at some point I'm like, okay, enough. Because when I'm too much in that space and I realize that my antennas for creative expression are kind of muted, the decisions that I make with my actual diet often end up following the level of energy that I'm engaging in the world around me. And so, I allow myself, but I'm watching myself now rather than like getting swallowed up in it.
Totally. And like, I think that's a healthy way to go about it. Like, you know, no one's perfect, right? We're not here like to shame anyone. I'll like binge out on a show. Some, you know, like we're watching White Lotus, you know, it's great. But yeah, like you said, like being aware, right, of what you're doing and like being in touch with yourself, like noticing if those things are starting to get to you or I don't know. The last time I went on like a Eckhart Tolle retreat, I turned my phone off and didn't touch it for a week. And it was like, I felt so good. And then when I went back to social media, it was like, I felt it. Like it does actually affect you.
Yeah, it really does. I'm with you. I think my phone usage when I'm at my worst or when I'm at my lowest it skyrockets. And it's a real, the mind goes to these places of like justifying these behaviors because we really are so want to avoid discomfort. It's insane. Yeah. And I think one thing that was helpful to me in therapy specifically was sort of feeling how uncomfortable the thing that I assumed that was soothing me was, like, meaning it became clear that actually the avoidance of the discomfort was actually uncomfortable. And that kind of helped me kind of like, well, if I'm going to make this uncomfortable decision, I might as well feel what I need to feel.
Yeah, totally. Again, you were being like very mindful and in touch with yourself, which is the difference, right? And so many people aren't able to like notice that, right? They're too checked out to notice that. So, that's great.
I think also, you know, again, I don't know how it works on a metaphysical or spiritual level, but there is a way in which the more that I ignore something, the more the universe will have a way of almost like hitting me upside the head and being hey, you need to look at this.
Yep.
Whether whether it's health stuff that comes up or, you know, the drugging and the robbing that happened to me was specifically in a moment where I was back to my numbing, you know?
That's literally why I left tech, because I was getting so many hits on the head. But now I have to ask about the drugging and robbing. Sure, you brought it up twice. So I'm sure this is a story.
It's a story. This is actually, you know, it wasn't that long ago. It was in January of 2022. I've done all the therapies. I've gone to the Joe Dispenza things. I've done the ayahuasca. I'm in the middle of writing the book. I'm a model for other people in my life for feeling my emotions. And lo and behold, I find myself in a situation like, you know, my best friend, he's been taking care of his mother who's got Alzheimer's for the last 10 years in Colombia and New Orleans. And he's just in a tough situation. And I went to visit them in Northern Colombia, and I was there for 2 weeks, and I was in a lot of pain, just trying to put up like a face of normalcy, both to him and his mom, to just create some sense of, yeah, of just showing up as normal as possible, or whatever that means. But I must have been pushing down a lot of really intense feelings, because I left Northern Colombia and I went straight to the capital, Bogota. And I was like, oh, let me get on the dating apps. I got on Bumble. Like, very familiar place for me to numb is through these dating apps. Like, I can totally distract by going and grabbing a drink with someone. So I match with someone who's a nomad in the crypto space. And I'm like, whoa, this is cool. Like, that makes sense to me. That's aligned. But she shows up at the bar of my hotel, and very quickly I realize that she's not actually a nomad, and she doesn't know anything about crypto, and she's not even really the same person in the pictures, I don't think.
Hmm.
But I'm like, whatever, let's just keep moving forward. And there was an inertia to this evening. I mean, not to say I'm definitely not devoid of responsibility here. I'm just saying it felt like I was on, like I was like, I had friends that were texting me, like, get out of this date, red flag, caution, caution, caution. And I just kept moving forward. By 9:30, I'm, 9:30 or 10, I've been given this drug called scopolamine or burundanga on the street. It makes you this, like, willing participant in your attacker's
plan. Is that that powder stuff that they, like, blow on you?
Yeah, I don't think it was blown on me, but I think
it was. I've seen documentaries on that.
That's, yeah, there's like a Vice one that people know about.
Yeah, that's the one, yeah.
Uh-huh. It's called Devil's Breath.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's crazy.
And you're, so that drug, I think, has like a 4 to 9 hour half-life. You really shouldn't be out for longer than that. And if you are, it's a sign that you've been overdosed. And that's usually the bigger risk. In Colombia, they usually don't like actively kill you, but they can accidentally overdose you. I was gone for 20 hours plus. And I wake up in my hotel room and my phone's gone and some other weird things are happening in the room. And I'm like, huh, I bet my crypto's gone too. I just had that feeling, and it was. Eventually my parents helped me get home to New Orleans. I did yoga for a month and a half. I cried in my mom's arms. Well, I was probably 38 at the time, 37. I never once, honestly, I never once was angry at her. I never once thought about the money. I just thought about how lucky I was to be alive and how I really wanted to learn from this experience.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
And that's a testament to all the tools you had acquired along the way through therapy and plant medicine and doing a lot of, looking inside. Wow, that's a crazy story. Those 20 hours are just gone for you. Like, there's no recollection. Like, you don't know where you are.
There's no recollection in my mind. Now, for a couple of months after the experience, around the time of the attack, I found myself having anxiety in that time window. It was like my body sort of knew that something had happened, but I have no memory of it.
Wow.
I think I like telling this story because it's in the middle of me writing the book. It's at that point when I think I'm good, or I think I've been, whatever it is. It's just a nice reminder to me, and I think to others, that this growth process isn't linear.
Yeah.
And just because you fall back doesn't mean you should give up.
I think that it's so important, that message, because there's this misconception that, oh, people that do the inner work or have had some kind of awakening or have worked on healing themselves are, like, good, right? But it's like, if we're here, we're still here to learn and have human experiences and grow. And And yeah, like there's still more to learn if we're here. And I like that you said it's not linear. I kind of think of it like a spiral. Like you kind of keep going back to lessons and you're like, God damn it. I thought I like was good on this. And
yeah,
but you still see it from a different perspective like you did.
Yeah. And I had some really necessary lessons there. Like I really was over-identifying with the money, for example. And I was using money as a way to avoid some of the self-worth stuff that was underneath the surface, that had always been underneath the surface. And I was capable, still capable of numbing out. And, you know, when I would go to a place of discomfort, choosing numbing and compulsive behavior as a way to avoid myself. And I guess I didn't feel physical pain because I wasn't really present for the attack, but I did suffer in some way. And so you realize, oh yeah, I've been aware that, you know, the numbing isn't actually that avoidant of the discomfort. Like I don't actually succeed in avoiding discomfort. This was like a clear example. It's like, oh, you're still really uncomfortable and you were numbing. So like, you know, dude, you gotta look at it. And I'm really thankful. I don't really, you know, I guess it is some of the stuff that I'd done prior to that. But I'm really thankful I went home and I really did like soft yoga. I did some, you know, athletic style yogas at times, but I really did more yin yoga and like soft yoga that just allowed me to be in my feelings for a month and a half and really feel the experience. And that was transformational. Like I felt like that really changed. That was a game changer.
Yeah, that's amazing. It's so funny that the universe gave you an experience based on like what, I mean, it's kind of like the grandmother of plant medicine, right? Like based on like what you were struggling with, right? It was like, oh, you were still hiding your self-worth issues behind the money. It's like, all right, well, let's take the money away.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now you can't do that.
Yeah, you can't do that. And like, if you don't listen, I mean, like it's getting, we're getting progressively more serious here, you know? Like,
right.
We got to get you to listen.
Right. It's like, it starts with a poke and then pretty soon it's like shaking you by the shoulders.
Exactly.
So, okay. So what happened after, and by the way, I love that you healed with yoga. I had a yoga company that I sold in April, but
yeah,
yoga is so healing. Thank you. Yoga is so healing. So what happened after the 6 weeks of yoga? Like you emerged from that, you were able to feel it. Is that kind of when you left tech for good or?
I 2022 is it, we're in the middle of the pandemic. I basically had left tech in 2020. I had started an acting kind of process, actually related to a Jim Carrey movie called Jim and Andy, which is a documentary about his portrayal of Andy Kaufman on Man on the Moon. And I saw that film and I was like, I want to be an actor. I already feel like I transmit or people transmit, you know, different energies through them when they're reflecting something authentically. So I was like, I want to do more of that. And I was starting to really get back to this dream that I had back before I got into tech, which was trying to be a travel show host on TV. And I was starting, I come out of those 6 weeks of yoga. And I'm starting to be very open about my dreams about that. Really proud of myself that I didn't like lose faith in humanity. Like I didn't have this anger that and distrust of humans. I really just was in this zone of, no, now's the time to put my gifts out into the world. So I just started to be open more about that desire. And I spoke, probably in April, around April. Yeah. My buddy's birthday with this woman director named Azra, she's Bosnian. I was talking about her openly in Los Angeles about this dream. And I had a conversation, didn't think much of it. And then 2 months later, she calls me from Bosnia. And she's like, I found the production company that will help us produce this travel show. Can you be in Bosnia, like within the next 2 or 3 days. And I was like, yes.
Amazing.
And so we shot what was then for TV, or meant to be for a TV, like a full Bosnian episode. It was so cool. It was like filled with, it was like 7-person crew. It was magical. Got to go back to Azra's hometown. She's a refugee that left during the war in 1993. And it was just a deeply personal, beautiful story. And that's kind of what kickstarted this process of wanting to tell more of these stories of human connection around the world.
So what happened to the TV show? Is it aired somewhere?
No. So the TV show was called Made In, the idea being that it would be made entirely by a Bosnian crew and edited in Bosnia. And so we ran into some problems with just like bringing it to a conclusion. But that was, you know, that was kind of on hold. And then I started doing these other episodes where I went to Finland, Morocco, Spain, Argentina. And then eventually Azra was able to get that content edited down for social media, which is what the expression had then become about, because we had created a teaser reel from the Bosnian footage and then shopped it around. And the message that I got from executives in TV was, hey, we don't know who you are. And we've been doing more travel content with more celebrities and known people. So I then transitioned into a more social media expression, did the other episodes for social media specifically, and then started repurposing the Bosnian material for social media. We launched one episode about these Bosnian pyramids. That's been released. And now Azra is working with the editors in Bosnia to edit the other 2 or 3 episodes that are going to come out from it.
That's cool. Is the pyramid episode on YouTube or something?
Yeah, that's okay. Out.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
Yeah, that's a really cool episode, actually.
Cool.
There are these Bosnian pyramids where this one man has discovered them, and he's kind of like a larger than life, almost like cult like leader. He's got a whole group of something like 5,000 to 10,000 volunteers who help him excavate, but UNESCO thinks he's a scam artist, and he might be. And then Novak Djokovic, the tennis player, got involved, and he drinks water from the underneath the pyramids during his like matches. So he's brought attention to it. So it's in this like realm of like, what is it? Archaeology and pseudoscience. And it's like the truth of where it is kind of unclear.
Sounds like a History Channel would love that.
Yeah, it's like it's cool.
Reminds me of like Ancient Aliens or something.
It's totally like that.
That's super cool. Okay, so I want to get back to, you know, I'm just looking over here in my notes at your bio. You started to explore the different dimensions of our consciousness. So talk to me a little bit about that. Like, what was that exploration like? Where have you kind of ended up with that?
It's hard actually for me to put words on it, and I think that's maybe a good thing. I think I just am aware that our reality, the reality that we see and experience, there's oftentimes little breaks in the matrix, in the logic way of seeing the world, where I experience these like moments of connectedness with other humans or synchronicities or just these moments that are beyond what our eyes normally are tricked into seeing. I think that's the general realm that I explore different aspects of our consciousness, in the sense that there's a reality that we are attuned to. That same reality is reinforced by a lot of mechanisms in our society, which I'm sensitive to, whether it be politics, religion, culture, the capitalist drive to succeed and make money, and the pressure systems there, and the fear-based systems that get passed on, and you know, women have a whole other set of pressures that are put onto them in society, and men have another set of you know. And so I'm keenly aware of the structure of our reality, and then there are breaks from it that I also, because of my love for humans, can also feel. I feel the energy that exists when I'm present with someone, when I'm in nature and I feel sort of the power of nature. There's these just moments that break from the rule system, and it just leads me to ask more questions. Probably it leads me to really question the binary existence around me. It allows me to question the things that hold ideas together, the containers themselves. And so I expand more and more through those questions and becoming more aware of the alternate reality of a space that occupies what I would call probably our true reality. And so it's in that zone that I would say that I like try to live inside of more, mostly, while still obviously, you know, living, being an active participant in the created reality before us. So I guess I don't fully understand it. If I tried to put words on it, maybe I would do it a disservice in some ways, because like, I think it exists in a formless space.
Yeah, no, I thought that was a really thoughtful answer. And I think I think what you said, like, a lot of people pick up on, right? Like, there's more to this reality than meets the eye. Like, one of my favorite statistics is the human eye can only see 0.0035% of the visible light spectrum. So over 99% of the light spectrum is invisible to us. Like, that's just like a hard fact that demonstrates like there's so much more going on than like we're aware of. And and when you start to tune into things like the law of attraction or the quantum field, or, you know, like even just like learning about quantum physics and epigenetics and neuroscience and how it all kind of backs up spirituality, you start to go like, huh, okay, there's more going on here than this like grind of eat, sleep, money, entertainment, you know, work, all of that. So yeah, no, I thought you did a great job. So when you're talking about, like, I know you talk a lot about like these external systems that take our power away. Is that kind of what you were just referring to?
Yeah. I mean, I think that there are, you know, collective ways in which we give away our power, and I'm certainly attuned to those, but I think the way out of those collective systems is actually more of an individual process. Like, I think if we can really be sensitive to the ways in which in small ways we give away our power, then we can then we can reclaim that loss of power on the collective. So I think I was talking just now more on that collective level, and I think the work that I tend to do happens a little bit more on the individual level within myself, and then a reflection of that on others and within like a relational dynamics with other people. I feel like those ways I am much more attuned to, I'm attuned to the other one too. I just feel like it's more useful than to kind of like put blame on the, or like just blanket swath target the collective ways we give away our power. Like, I feel like an expression of that are some of these like conspiracy theories, for example. That's like a complaint on the collective, but with an avoidance of the of what actually is happening internally for someone. Because actually people are probably quite afraid. And maybe they're afraid of their own mortality, of the uncertainty in the world. And that gets channeled into looking externally at the ways in which the forces that be are now controlling all of us, but it skips a step, for example.
I think it's really easy to place blame on outside events and other people, like even to like blame your suffering or the things that have gone wrong in your family tree, you're in your own life, because you avoid taking responsibility. Right, like you don't have to look at yourself. Yeah,
responsibility is so key.
Yeah,
I'm actually in that right now, like I'm training to be a facilitator in a group therapy program called Core Energetics.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, part of that training is doing a lot of the self work. And man, in the last module that I did, I was noticing myself doing the thing that I do often in groups, which is I separate myself. I look for ways to kind of draw wedges between me and others, and then I run away. It's been really helpful for like all of the travels that I've done and the explorations that I've done, but it's not been that great for me to actually for embedding within a community or building a relationship, for example.
Mm.
And so I found myself, you know, through some process, looking at the guy in my group and being like, I hate how inauthentic you are. And to the woman in my group, I hate how manipulative you are. And to the other guy, I hate how judgmental you are. And then I was like, oh, I hate the part of me that is judgmental, inauthentic, and manipulative. And because I hate it so much, I hate that part in you. And then I project it completely onto you. And then I leave myself with no other option but to then create the separation. That's my responsibility. Now, is the inauthentic person and the manipulative person and the judgmental person, are they being inauthentic, manipulative, and judgmental? Sure. I'm sure they are. But my responsibility lies in the way in which I've projected my own hatred of certain parts of myself onto them. Yeah. And so without the expectation that they need to change, I have to own, or I want to own, the ways in which I'm leading to the separation.
It's interesting too, because like everyone really is a reflection of you, and everyone has so many facets to them. And it's like what you, the side you focus on is what you're going to get more of, right? So it's like if you had maybe turned down that judgmental aspect, like maybe that other person wouldn't have appeared judgmental to you, right? It's like people show up the way that we kind of expect them to, right?
Well, interestingly, yeah, that's true. Like you'll look for, you'll find confirmation in those places for sure.
Exactly.
What is interesting specifically with the, actually not the judgmental person, the inauthentic person came and talked to me after the session. And I felt like he was being a bit condescending to me in his comments to me after my process. And what was interesting was I was like, oh, I could go to the place where I try to one up him and show him how he's wrong. But actually, I stayed with him and I was like, oh, this is the part where he still has some work to do. And I could stay with my own goodness here and stay in connection with him. That's what I thought was actually really fascinating, was like the becoming aware of my responsibility didn't change his behavior. It didn't even really change how I was able to notice the behavior coming in my direction. It affected the way in which I used that behavior to push him away.
Mm. Yeah, that's interesting. Have you ever found like I've found this before where if I feel like someone is being like, I don't know, cold and aloof and distant, later I'll find out that that person thought the same about me. Like, yeah. Have you ever had that experience where it's
all the time?
Yeah. And it's like, it's just, we really are connected. We really are reflections of each other.
I love judgments. Like, I mean, I don't love them, but I'm saying like, there's such a way, like, I really haven't had a judgment of you. Like, but if I would have had a judgment of you, it would have been, I was like, oh, like I must have some part of me that is uncomfortable with that aspect of me.
Hmm.
It's the only way I would be able to notice it in such a way in you.
So that's interesting. So like you didn't have a judgment of me. So do you think that's because of the work you've done, or is it only like certain people? Maybe like I don't have anything about me that correlates to a part of you that you're still working through. You know, do you get what I'm asking? And not,
yeah,
I'm just targeting you, but I just mean people in general.
Yeah. I mean, I think people are going to like, I don't have a real good answer. I was going to say I already came to this earth with less judgments, but that's a BS comment. I think probably there's just nothing right now. Like maybe if we would spend more time together, some judgment would come up. You know, like I noticed, for example, here's an aspect. I noticed you had a way of like you have some not rules, but you have some guidelines around what you want in your podcast, right? Like authentic expression, conversational, those kinds of things. Sometimes my mind will go to like, don't put rules on me, you know, like, so that was like an initial energy that I felt, but you know, also I like really respected the way in which you showed up with what you needed and wanted. And rather than take it as like, oh, how dare she assume that I'm going to show up, you know, not authentically or whatever. Like I was like, oh, this is great. She has a desire and she's showing up openly with what she wants and needs. And so that's an example of how maybe in the past I would have maybe had a reaction to it.
But okay, I love that you brought up that example. Thank you for bringing up that example, because it so clearly shows how everyone is coming from their own past and their own like filter and their own like lived experiences, right? Like I say that because I've had a couple guests on the show who make the whole thing like one giant commercial for their product. And then I can't use those episodes because it's like so fucking salesy. And I'm like, no one wants to listen to that. I didn't want to listen to it for an hour. It's like, do you have to reference your book every 5 minutes? Like I give you a chance at the end. So like, that's where I'm like, I've gone through so many of these where I'm like, I just am clear. Yeah. And then we have a great conversation. It reminds me, okay, this is like such a small example, but so I have a neighbor that lives near me and a new neighbor moved in, and the neighbor who lived near me had asked the new neighbor, like, oh, where are you from? And she's like, oh, I'm from Illinois. And the new neighbor's like, oh, like, or then the old neighbor's like, oh, I'm from Texas. And the Illinois one was like, oh, do you miss it? And she's like, no. And so old neighbor came to me and she's like, oh my God, this girl like totally like gave me this weird look when I told her I like didn't miss Texas. And it has to be because she's like a Republican, because like only Republicans would be like, oh, you're not upset that you left Texas. And I'm like, okay, like I just kind of like let that go. And I was chatting with new neighbor, Illinois girl, and I was like, oh my gosh, I'm from Illinois too. She's like, oh, like, do you miss it? I'm like, yeah, you know, like I miss parts of it. She's like, I'm so homesick. And it was like, immediately I thought back to conversation with first neighbor. It's like, Illinois girl was asking if she missed it because she's like homesick for like her family and her mom. She just had a baby. Like she was like trying to have that connection with her. Whereas like, old neighbor from Texas is like, oh, if you're upset that I'm like, or if you gave me a weird look, which she probably was just kind of shocked that she was just like, no, I don't miss it. Yeah. It's like, oh, you must be a Republican and therefore like I have judgments about you. And it's such you know what I mean? It's just like we all come with our own stuff.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. In the work of core energetics, we talk about images a lot. Like we have this image of what reality is, and then we go back home and we believe that that is the reality. And that's why like human dynamics are so important, because they can show us how the reality that we're living in is completely created by our own stuff. Yeah. And so I love doing these reality checks. We're like, hey, I just want to check in with you. Did you mean to, you know, write those rules to me because you didn't think I was going to, you know, fulfill them or what, you know? And you're like, no, I just am tired of having people on my show who show up in this way. And I'm, you know, it would be like totally fine. You know, like we would probably get closer as a result of that conversation.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, we avoid that sadly, and we stay in our own reality because we think it's more comfortable.
And we also don't understand, a lot of people don't understand that people have their own lens and they come from their own thing. Like I heard this like really great definition of empathy that I love. And it's that understanding that other people's path is just as valid as yours.
Yeah.
And it's like, gave me goosebumps to just say, because it's like, yeah, we're all on our own path. We all have our own lens. We all live in our own reality, and yours isn't any more valid than mine, or mine's not any more valid than whoever's, right? It's, you know, it kind of takes the ego out of it.
Yeah. I think the, what I struggle with is, I mean, I love this image of lenses, because I think I play around with it a lot, in the sense that it's really easy. I mean, I'm a reflector in human design. Maybe that's an aspect of that. I don't know. But it's very easy for me to put on someone else's lens. Mm. It's very hard for me to stay with my own. And that's, I think that's like one thing that I've been working on. Not to say that I need to have a lens, but there is an experience that I'm having at times. And my sensitive little boy in me is so, I'm not sure it's empathy, but he's so sensitive that he'll tune into the other lenses, but I'll abandon my own.
Hmm.
And I think that's like a place that I'm wanting to get better, because ultimately that's another way in which I can separate from others, by not honoring what my experience is.
It almost sounds like an empath, right? Where yeah, it's like kind of take on the energy of other people.
I think I'm an empath, and but then have done certain things to protect my energy, which I think other people would interpret as me not being an empath, but being quite distant in many ways. But that's just like my own protective mechanism for,
it's a trauma response.
Yeah, it is, for sure.
Yeah.
But I'm in it. That's like the world I'm in right now.
That's cool. It sounds like a really cool program.
Yeah. And also the program is part of that.
So what do you do with the program when you're done? Like, do you run like group workshops? Like what's the ultimate goal?
I don't know. I don't really live my life like that, actually. like maybe I should. But like, I know that taking this program is bringing me a lot of joy and growth for myself right now. And I know that I'm really good at it. Like, I'm really good at holding other people's projections and then stepping into an impulse, like to help someone else in their process. I know how to help myself in certain processes by having people almost like represent certain things in the room that I can use for my own growth. So like, I have a skill, a gift there. I'm learning, and I'm enjoying the learning process. I definitely see how group, you know, maybe one day I'll have a piece of land where I organize retreats. And that could be one way that I facilitate and also partake in other people's retreats. But I really don't have it so clear in my mind. And, you know, my own, another trauma response of mine is probably not being able to, or being avoidant of really thinking about the future too much.
I mean, you're trusting the process, and that's amazing. Yeah. I think that's great.
I do trust the process.
And you're in a place where you're learning and you're feeling joy, and it sounds like you're right where you need to be.
Yeah. And I want to like let, I mean, I really talk about this a lot with my friends, which is like, yeah, I have gone from point A to point B. You give me like Harvard, perfect example. I can get a full ride at Harvard. I did it. Point A to point B. Now, but what did I sacrifice along the way in that goal? I was so tunnel vision on it that I for sure missed out on other things in my life. And the times that I've let myself stay in point A, move towards point B, but let go of point B, I often end up way beyond the alphabet in a place that I couldn't have imagined.
Yeah.
And I really love life from that place. I do. Now, there are limits to it. You know, like maybe I want to have a family and kids one day, and this whole way of doing things ain't going to cut it. But but for now, I really do enjoy the surprise of ending up in a place that is usually way more aligned with my higher self anyway, and is makes me experience life in a much more magical way. It's not for everybody, but it is the way that I've done things.
It's like how Bashar always talks about, like, just follow your joy and the universe kind of takes care of you.
Yeah.
Awesome. Is there anything we didn't talk about today that you like really were hoping to like get out to the world?
I know that I need to, I should talk about the book.
Yeah. Talk about the book. Tell us about the book.
but I want to say a caveat here, because I share your aversion to overly salesy, like energy in the world.
Well, we're at the end of the episode, so now is the time to talk about the book.
But even then, I really don't want to sell my book. What I want to say is, if anything I've said in this conversation with you resonates with anyone, then I really think you would find my book to be of value. It's called Captains Wanted. It's the story of a character written in second person, so it's you on your journey to find how to be the captain of your own ship in your own way. It's like an experience that at times is uncomfortable. And yeah, this character goes through many different ceremonies and journeys, and then hopefully comes out the other side with a sense of discernment, sovereignty, and freedom. And yeah, I hope that it is of use and of value to anyone who reads it. And if it doesn't resonate, I don't want you to read it.
So what does that mean to you to be the captain of your own ship?
Right now, what it means is to... last night, my best friend from Colombia told me a quote that an artist used to write on his paintings, that his name was, I think his name was Enrique Grau, or Grau is his last name, a Colombian artist. And he would write this saying that said, when you're your own mariner, you don't need a captain, essentially is the translation. And I like that definition right now, which is a sense like, I don't need to be at the helm of my ship and guiding it so directly. I want to be in flow with the world around me in a way that allows me to react in that state of flow and move directionally with what is moving in my life to allow for me to end up in a place that I'm supposed to be. So I'm really trying to get out of the way of the things that in the past have been used as anchor points or even like compass directions. And I want to get into a place where I can just be and live from my heart, feel things, let things flow through me, let emotions flow through me, and then kind of like move directionally and with peace, and have that be more than enough.
I love that. I kind of think that's like how humans were meant to live. You know, like you said, we are in such a fast-paced world where it's like, okay, hit this check mark and this check mark, and like hustle and grind, and you know, that's not good for our nervous systems. That's not good for our emotional health or our physical health or our spiritual health, and we lose connection to who we really are and to each other. And
And if you think about how we're an instrument in a much greater, you know, force of nature and of balance, like I just want to be the purest form within the natural process. And so that's what I am trying and wanting to move towards, is just to be that, like the purest form of who I'm meant to be.
Awesome. Well, this has been such a great conversation. Thank you so much for coming on, Andres. I'm sure people want to know where they can find you and watch your movies on social media and buy your book and connect with you and all that. So if you want to just take a moment and let people know.
Yeah, right now I'm Shable Mania on all the platforms. So IG, TikTok, and YouTube for the longer forms. But Instagram's a great place to connect with me. So Shableman plus IA at the end. And I really am one of these people that wants to hear if anything that I'm doing resonates with people. Like, so I really do encourage people to reach out to me. It does give me great joy to know that somehow me living my life has a positive impact on people, or negative, that's fine too. So I would love to hear from people if anything I say resonates with them.
Awesome. Well, again, thank you so much. It was so much fun to talk to you today. It was a great conversation. And yeah, if you're listening to this, send it to someone you think might resonate with it. Like, comment, share, subscribe, all the things. I'll see you next week. Have a great rest of your day.